The thing that strikes me, first of all, is the photograph of you. I've never met you. You look a bit like that big Liverpool comedian, the guy who does all the swimming and the running. What's his name?
Yeah. Oh, you know, I can't remember his name, but I get that quite often.
That's the cut of you. So you're a big athlete. And
well, the interesting thing about that, Frank, just to get a little bit of self-deprecation in there again, is I was walking through Gatwick Airport a couple of weeks ago, and I caught my reflection in the mirror as I walked past. And you know what I looked like? I looked more like Gerard Depardieu. So, say, you know...
Have you a great big nose on you?
I mean Gerard Depardieu now.
Your big nose doesn't come across here.
Well, this is the thing. That's what somebody said to me.
No, to me, can't let me remember your man's name, but you do look like that Liverpool...
John Bishop.
That's the boy. That is the boy. You definitely have the cut of John Bishop as you're swinging your golf club. I was talking to a couple of guys before the programme, and they were saying you couldn't have done it. That you couldn't have gone from like taking 100 to go round Blackwood to doing it in 69 in a year. How, first of all, did you do that?
Well, to be honest, you know, it was one of those things that a lot of... And look, I got a tremendous amount of that beforehand. I had seen Seve Ballesteros win the Irish Open in about 1981 or 1982 when I was 15. And it was kind of, quite a shockingly inspirational thing to see. You know, it's like somebody seeing George Best, for example, playing at his peak. You know, as a youngster, you can get very caught up in thinking, wouldn't it be wonderful to be like that? And I saw that at 15 and then did nothing about it. But I always had this dream that I could potentially have, you know, to paraphrase Marlon Brando, that I could have been a contender. And I reached the age of 37 and thought, you know what, I don't want to get to 40 and not have done this thing. So I, you know, I'm not, bear in mind, like all of us, I had actually put off the concept for about 10 years before that. So every year I was going to do it and then I didn't do it. But what I basically just did, I went completely back to scratch, you know, no golf pun intended. I worked with Debbie Hannah at Blackwood initially to really completely reinvent the complete basics of my swing. Completely pure fundamentals, which was kind of humiliating. And then I practiced. I actually hit 35,000 golf balls in the range, but I hit another 35,000 in short game practice. So I spent about 20 hours a week. I got up very early. Every lunchtime I went to, and then every evening for an hour or so I was at the range and sort of constantly trying to juggle, you know, a 7-year-old daughter and my marriage. So I just worked extraordinarily hard at it, but I did it also, you know, I'm not necessarily a particularly methodical person, but what you ultimately realize is to get good at anything like that, you really have to be brutally honest with yourself and the truth and the results and where you're missing the strokes. And golfers don't do that. You know, the golfers play a very different game. It's very socially based. You know, they could play hundreds and hundreds of hours of golf and not improve at all because it's so based around, you know, just, you know, the odd trip to the range, but all of the social side of things. So I focused very, very heavily on what made improvement, what didn't improve, and also what it wasn't worth me focusing on. You know, I never really learned how to fade or draw the ball because, as Debbie said to me at one stage, you know, Blackwood's a relatively straight course. So, you know, all you need to do is learn how to hit the ball straight. Just try and keep it very, very simple and be ruthlessly honest with your scores. Find out what's going wrong along the way and then go and fix that before you get back out onto the course again. Now, I'd love to be able to say that there's a really simple, you know, that there was one secret to the whole thing, but there just isn't, you know.
And are you a scratch golfer full stop now?
Well, no. To be honest, I haven't been playing a tremendous amount. Such is the nature of these things. I did quite a lot of damage to my wrist during that year, and ended up having to have surgery about 18 months ago, and I've ended up with quite arthritic shoulders as well. Not necessarily as a result of that, but I think I'm going to need some more surgery in that. So I haven't been playing very much, but we still kind of work. I work quite a lot with golfers in terms of golf improvement, and you know, the original book that came out of that was called Dream On, which was the quote that I got from Sam Torrance. But that's now being made into a film. I'm not sure whether you're aware of that. So that's, you know, it's turning into something much, much bigger now.
Where did you bump into Sam Torrance?
Well, my friend actually bumped into him at a corporate event at Royal County Down. So Sam was there doing his, you know, Ryder Cup legend thing and being very charismatic, and my friend, but also he was quite an intimidating character. So my friend, Stuart Kennedy, from the Spectator newspapers in Bangor, sort of meandered up to him slightly nervously and said, look, I have this friend who's thinking of doing this thing. What do you think? And Sam said, just tell him to dream on. And my friend, whoa, that's brilliant. What a great line. Can I quote you in that? So then I managed to get hold of Sam when it was finished and the book was out at the Turnberry Open, remember, a few years ago. And he'd forgotten about the whole thing. So it was kind of humiliating to be presenting him with this book with his, you know, with his quote in the front and me thinking, oh, Lordy, you know, he's forgotten about it. But then he remembered and gave me a huge plug in the Sunday of the Open, and that's when the book went ballistic. So the book sold huge quantities now all over the world. But, I kind of have to thank Sam on two ways, you know, for giving me the title and also giving me that huge plug in TV.
And who's going to be in this movie? When's it going to be made?
The movie was half shot last summer. Then, as is always the case in that industry, as I'm sure you are probably aware, money ran out. So money is now back again, and it starts reshooting next spring, and will be out the year after that.
Are there any stars in this?
Well, there's a guy called Richard Coyle who's playing me. He's one of those characters that not everybody knows his name, but he if you Google him, you will instantly know his face. And then there's Sienna Guillory who plays my wife, and she has been she's stunning looking and was in, you know, one of those sort of shoot 'em up Resident Evil films and lots of other great stuff too. And then we have Sam Torrance playing himself, and we have, you know, maybe a few other cameos. There was in theory a cameo that maybe Nick Faldo might come in and commentate on the final round live on the course, which I'm sure you can imagine was not the reality as I was meandering my way around Blackwood, you know, those years ago.
I have to say, I've just clicked on Richard Coyle. I see exactly who you're talking about.
You know what I mean? Yes, it's you
just surround yourself with good-looking people. You know, you're a good-looking guy. You're now in the movie game. You have this new book out, which is 50 Greatest Golf Tips. All I want to know from you is who's going to win the Ryder Cup?
Well, I know, but do you know what, Frank? So let's have a little look at Northern Ireland. Sometimes we have to sit back and think, you know, what are we like? You know, for all those years ago, we were famous for, you know, shooting and blowing each other up and all sorts of dire and doom and grey, and now we just dominate the golfing world. You know, Rory sitting there on the top, and Graham McDowell, you know, doing a very similar thing, and Darren just, you know, kind of one of the most popular golfers in the world and having won his own major. You know, it's just an incredible country now, and now we're going to get the Open. So, you know, I do you know what? I really, really hope we'll win. I think the chances are that we'll win, but from a Northern Irish perspective, it just continues to be the most wonderful journey for golf in Northern Ireland, you know, for the size of it to have. There's only one Scots person in the Ryder Cup team, and then we've got, you know, two of ours and Rory right at the top. So, we really should win is the answer. But you
could
never know.
Could you have made it if you had dedicated yourself to golf at a young age?
Well, this is what I was trying to prove, and to be honest, I absolutely believe I could have done it. I was listening. I led an interview with Paul. I mean, bear in mind, Ian Poulter was only playing off three or four whenever he turned pro. Now that was roughly the level that I got to. And Paul McGinley was playing off six when he went to university, and all he did was just practice much, much longer than his mates.
How close did you come to being a professional golfer? You know,
in my earlier life, I never got below a handicap of 15. So, you know, I didn't practice at all. I just didn't, you know what I didn't understand? I never understood the concept of hard work and discipline, you know.
But you feel like in the latter stages of your life, as you were about to write that book, that you could have broken into it.
Oh, well, I do, because I spoke to, it's interesting, but breaking into it can happen at many levels. I could have become a professional golfer because I could have taken another year and done the various exams. But I would have been, all I would have been is a professional golfer who could have sort of played at, you know, helped to coach people.
Yeah.
And then you've got to do that whole step above that to go and manage to, you know, win a few tournaments on the lower tours. But to get to that level where it's not a horrific slog, you know, to go out and play in the European Tour, you've got to be making a minimum of 70 or 80 grand a year just to pay your costs. You know, that rarefied world of the Rorys and so on and the private jets is only open to a tiny, tiny fraction.
Totally, we don't expect you to do that. But in the meantime, you ran a coffee shop or whatever, is that what you did?
That's right, I used to always run hospitality businesses and fruit coffee shops, and I was very heavily involved in Donaghadee Garden Centre for a while. I had a chain of sandwiches called Dante's in Belfast when I was younger. My chip shops. So I've done lots of food businesses. I've actually written a couple of books.
Have you made plenty of money, John? Because you're impressing me here. Have you made plenty of money?
One of the interesting things about all of this, Frank, is never be too impressed by my stuff. What I have a slight tendency to do is every time I make some money, is dart onto the next exciting thing. So, you know, I have had phases where it's gone very well, and then I go off and do something else that's exciting. So,
what was your involvement with Dante's? Did you set that up?
I did, yeah, with a friend of mine. Yeah.
See, you are a bit of a winner going along the way. Absolutely.
You know what, Frank? Here's the story of Dante's. We grew so fast, became the biggest sandwich business in Ireland, and we didn't go bankrupt, but we went busted when I was 28 or 29 because we grew too fast. So it was a fantastic, exciting story. But yeah, that was what it was all about.
That's interesting. But you know, if all of this can be incorporated into the film, I want to see the movie, because you've certainly set out to be a winner. You've got this new book, 50 Greatest Golf Tips. Either, John, you're the greatest self-publicist, or you're the greatest businessman I've ever spoken to. It's a pleasure having you on.